The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack for another edition of the Knapsack Files interviews. I have a returning guest today. It's been a long time because time flies. He's a writer. He's a wonderful comedian like I was, which means we're both not doing it. And he's a father and husband. Some new wrinkles since the last time he was here. It's Michael Beatrice. How are you?
Ken, it is good to see you.
Good to be back.
That intro
good to have
made
you
me
back.
Sound fantastic.
You are fantastic.
I'm excited about this podcast, and I know me.
Everyone should be excited.
You know what I love? I was thinking about this on the way here.
Yeah.
I love that, I have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about.
I don't either.
No pre-show.
No.
No pre-interview.
No.
No producers. No
producers.
Agenda. It's a free-flowing conversation.
I always have an agenda. It usually ends up with some kind of 7-Eleven food.
This would be like the end of Jerry Maguire where Rod Tidwell breaks down in the interview. You're going to have me crying in like 30 minutes.
This is Roy Firestone.
Right, exactly.
That's my goal. I grew up watching a lot of Roy Firestone on ESPN. That's probably more influential than I thought. Yeah.
Should we set the stage for anybody that might possibly be listening to this?
Yeah.
We have known each other probably for 15-ish years.
About 15. So, yeah, stand-up comedy world. Mm-hmm. 2003 is when I started, but about 2004 was when I really picked up in earnest.
Right.
I'm trying to remember the first time I met you. I don't recall it. It's been that long.
Well, I don't recall much from that era. So that's... I was like early 30s. Yeah. I had just started doing stand-up. I was bartending with our friend Jamie Kaler.
Right.
And I got pulled into that world, and you were there. And I've known you since then. We are friends.
Friends. Confidants.
Yeah. So
never enemies.
We have met and talked and discussed things, and now we're doing it for public consumption.
Public consumption. Your first appearance on here, I mean, I had the old microphones, it was my old apartment, it was the old setup, and a lot has changed, and I think it's a good place to start is marriage and children have come into your life.
Yes, they have.
Have pulled you out of the muck and mire.
Yes, they have.
And changed you in a positive way, but changed you nonetheless.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated with that change.
Oh, me too.
How's that going?
Well, the change continues.
Yeah.
It's a whole state of flux. I love being married.
Yeah.
And I love having kids.
That's good.
And, it doesn't make any sense to talk about it without putting it in the context of my 30s. Cause mm-hmm. I got married at 40.
Right. A little late in the game.
Right. Right.
Some would say.
Yes.
Probably
yes,
just would. Right for you.
I think it's more common now, I think. I think it's less atypical. Age is blurry now.
Yeah.
I do have two types of friends, though. Friends that got married right out of the gate, like right out of college, and their kids are going to college
right
now.
Right.
And then there are the friends that, of course, I spent more time with because they weren't married and didn't have children.
Yes.
Who waited... If, you know,
these are most of the comics.
Yeah. And so now, like, my very good friends have young children like I do that are essentially toddlers.
Which Kaler started late. Mm-hmm. A lot of people started late. But again, that word late is a relative term.
Yeah, you can't see, but air quote
around late. Right. Did you, is this a surprise? Not marriage is probably less of a surprise, but children can sometimes be a surprise for someone based on what they thought in their 30s or their 20s. Were you one of those, I'm going to have kids one day, guys? Is that why you started late? What's the story there? And where does that Michael Beatrice look at this Beatrice and go, wow, look at you?
I have always been family oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed running around being a knucklehead in my 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed writing my own ticket. As it turns out, I was becoming less and less of a functional human being out in the world. Some stuff happened, which we can certainly talk about if you care to.
Sure.
But I always had an idea that I would be married and have children. And oddly, I always thought it would be girls, which is what happened. Yeah.
Which is, so you got two girls.
Yeah.
How old now? Because it's been a couple of years.
Yeah. I don't have babies anymore. Ken. Yeah. I have a 2-year-old and a 3.5-year-old.
Oh, man. That
the
is.
3.5-year-old, by the way, yeah. 3 is preteen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Preteen. Preteen. Me. Yeah. So I always knew
That's a loud house, isn't it? 2 and 3?
Yeah. Thank God you're not boys. Boys is a whole different deal. But I always knew, I always thought I would be, but as it turned out, I was never, it's like a lot of things. You have an idea that that's how it's going to be, but you kind of have to take some action and work for it.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff happened when I turned 40, and I'm very happy and grateful to be married to this woman, Melina, yeah. who, you know, it's you hear it a lot. It sounds trite, but yeah. you know, it's hard for me to conceive of a time before her. We are best friends. We are yeah. husband and wife. We are married. We are in love. We are sure. a couple. But I'm also married to my best friend.
Right.
We front loaded a lot of our issues. So we are really just like clean and good and doing it now.
When you say front loaded your issues, that's an important statement and a nice little bumper sticker thing there. I mean, was that conscious? Did you sit down? Did you just get through stuff naturally in the course of a relationship?
Yeah. No. Thank God I've listened to some of your, I listen to your podcast because I know people do get serious.
I listened
to Parker.
Yes.
Roberts recently.
Yes.
So there's no harm saying that I was falling apart in my late 30s.
Yeah.
I am an alcoholic.
Right.
And it was not going well for me.
Yeah.
And so it overlapped into me cohabitating with this woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a general way, I would say the bottom was falling up pretty quickly for me.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons it shouldn't have worked. There's a lot of reasons I shouldn't have worked.
Right.
But we got through it. I don't live that way anymore.
Right.
And so I was able to be, you know, 50% of a very functional marriage family unit.
Right.
And so surviving that.
Yeah.
And you know, she's got her own story about other things. But, you know, look, we have logistical problems, but
sure.
she and I have no marital problems.
Right.
Zero,
right.
none. We are so good. And I don't take it for granted, but we were able to go forth and have children and just, I mean, it's tiring and physically draining and emotional and
you haven't seen a Star Wars film in completion,
that's
you know,
right.
which
that's
I do
right.
want to talk about in a bit.
I'm going to get to see Return of the Jedi one of these days. it was, so, you know, we experience it in every way you can experience it from a foundation of being a wonderfully healthy, functional, married human couple.
I love
How's that.
No, that's great. And I mean, would you mind diving in into a little bit into the alcoholic thing?
No, not at all.
Because we know.
Yes. Yeah, I will dive into it. But the only caveat I want to put out there is I don't want to endorse any form of recovery. I don't want to be the poster child for any form of recovery, except to say that I was able, when I was desperate enough and willing enough to go get help, I found help.
Yeah.
Because I certainly couldn't fix me on my own.
You don't.
I don't want to endorse any
one specific path.
Correct.
This isn't the Mike Beatrice School of Recovery. No.
I can only speak for my alcoholism.
That is key. It's fascinates, not the word. Well, you know, this stuff, when we as your friends heard, I got a bit, I was slightly surprised. Because that word means something different, I guess, from the outside,
yes.
right?
Yes.
I never picked you up from a gutter. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
And there are others in the stand-up world where that was literally the case.
Right.
So for you to come to hear that now, to have you looking back and saying you were falling apart, I mean, you were doing a good job of hiding it from me then. You know, not that we were hanging out every night of the week.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated a little bit to what brought you to hit that bottom.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't realize this for a while, but you. Well, first of all, I did. I slept in my car, which was parked in a gutter. So there's a degree of separation.
Gutter, nonetheless.
Yeah. So it was a 20-year drinking career. It was a slow descent until I woke up one day and I was a round the clock 24/7 365 drinker.
Right,
I was not always drunk, but I was never 1,000% sober.
Right.
And I would say. The quick way to phrase it is that for a big chunk of my adult life, I was drinking to live. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of crossed the horizon and started drinking to not die, which is not a fun way to drink.
Mm.
And
no, it takes at least 20% of the fun out.
Yeah. I didn't realize I had swapped out my social circles. I had friends who were very light drinkers or didn't drink at all, and I love them. They're my great friends, and I was spending less and less time with them, and spending more and more time with our comedy scene friends, which doesn't mean all of them were drinkers, but there were a lot of heavy drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
It was always an alcohol environment. And so I had a lot of people like you, like some of our other friends. Oh, man, you know, we were all doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that you saw.
Mm, yeah.
You didn't know what was going on inside.
Yeah.
You didn't see the drinks before, the sneaked drinks during, and you certainly didn't see the drinks after and the after effect.
Right.
So there was a lot of, I mean, I really appreciated all of my friends, including you, mm-hmm. who were A, surprised,
mm-hmm.
B, supportive, and see curious.
Yeah.
And so it's just part of my life now, and you know, they say never fixed, never cured.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, you know, I haven't had a drink in a while.
Yeah.
It's
a daily,
yeah.
Like with depression for me, I have to choose every day.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight it.
I got sober in 2011.
Right.
Right. When I'm 40 years old. I'm 46 now.
Good.
The idea that I won't drink again for the rest of my life still mm-hmm. causes this interior flutter of panic. Like, how is that going to happen?
I've got a long way to go and I need a glass of wine. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it seems like someday there might be something, but not today.
Not today.
And it's not even that conscious anymore. It's another way that I filter my life,
mm-hmm.
And most people don't care.
Yeah.
So my job is to be the best sober human I can be, and not make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Like, this is interesting for me to talk about because I know you and you know other people like me, and maybe somebody listening has an interest in it. But generally speaking, nobody cares.
Right.
And the people in our life care.
I get that. Yeah.
But, you know,
on your day to day, go through the Target grocery stores and all that stuff. No one cares.
Right. Look at me. I'm a sober alcoholic. That's weird. Thanks for sharing. Nobody cares.
But a lot of people probably carrying that battle.
You know what it's like? It's like everything relates to movies, Ken. It's like Crash Davis and Bull Durham.
It is.
When Susan Sarandon says, "Oh my God, I'm going to tell everybody you're about to have this great achievement," and he's like, "Just stop, will you? Nobody cares, and it's embarrassing. Just leave it alone."
Michael Beatrice, the Crash Davis.
That's right.
Of life. But you come you come to that decision, you come to that point, you get the help, and you take your path. I love those points in life, though, we all can think about changing, we all can think about helping ourselves or taking those paths, but then there's that one moment where you mm-hmm. click over.
Yeah.
Without the details of the moment or what gutter it was.
Yep.
It was off La Brea and Beverly, probably. What made you click over?
It's weird. I was in a detox unit. Mm. I realized I was in over my head.
Yeah.
Because now I was cohabitating with somebody,
right.
And so now there was somebody invested in my well-being, as opposed to me just living the life the way I was living it.
With no rules.
So, but none of that would stop me from doing what I was doing because, again, I can't stress this enough. I can't stop me.
Right.
I can't fix me. I can't stop me. And so I went to a detox unit to medically reboot myself from alcohol.
Gotcha.
And I drank again.
Yeah.
Because just getting separated from the alcohol wasn't enough because I will drink. I will.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Unless there's some kind of outside intervention. And so it was another 6 months before I actually got like the first day really sober.
Mm.
And in those 6 months... Everything that led me to detox, I hadn't even done the worst of my drinking yet.
Interesting.
It was going to be now because now I'm fighting it. I'm not going along for the ride. I'm fighting it, and I'm losing.
Right.
And it was a succession. You have probably everybody's heard the word bottoming out.
Yeah.
The phrase bottoming out. Mm-hmm. It was a succession of, oh, that's a bottom. Mm-hmm. Well, there's another one. Wow, this one's even
can't
lower.
Go any lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a 48-hour period where just everything in my life, everything that involved my wife, my family, my future, my very life.
Yeah.
And it culminated with me, if you want to know the truth, it culminated with me waking up in an emergency room.
Okay.
That's when I got really scared and desperate and said, I'm going to go get help, like real help.
Right.
And even then, it took me another 2 months.
Yeah, even then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
that's the key.
Even then, despite everything I told you, mm-hmm. I still wanted to keep my hands on the wheel and kind of run the show. It's very hard, even if it's not going well, to let go and say, I surrender.
Mm.
And so it was another 2 months before I was convinced yet again to surrender and get better somebody else's way.
I like that phrase, somebody else's way.
Yeah.
The power, the control that we all want.
And it was, you know, it's hard at first doing something new, living differently.
Yeah.
Physically detoxing is hard.
Right.
But also emotionally.
Yeah.
And then just learning to do it and doing what other people like me have done and getting comfortable and feeling like I'm a functional human being.
Yeah. Which we're happy to say now you are a functional father.
Or should we say normally dysfunctional?
Normally dysfunctional father.
like a normal person.
Like and you you like me, we don't do stand up. Yeah, when's the last time you've done stand up?
I did it once after I stopped drinking to prove I could do it.
Ah.
And though
I came back once to prove I couldn't.
many people, including me, would disagree, Ken.
You were always my biggest fan.
Yeah.
As in one solitary fan.
Right. President and membership of your fan club. We're getting t-shirt made.
Yeah. T-shirt. Indeed. One so, size.
But honestly, I would probably still venture out to do it, mm-hmm. but two things prevent me. Time, and I'm terrified.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to segue into like a Hollywood career stuff,
yeah, I want to know like, that.
My window, as for many of us, the window to succeed and get some traction is our 20s and 30s.
It's a small window when the time flies.
And it turns out I was self-handicapped.
Mm.
And so now at a time in my life when I have, and it wouldn't be easy because I don't think it'd be a surprise to you. I'm still full of fears and anxieties and self-doubts. Again, like many people.
Like many people, yeah.
You know, maybe a little more, mm. above average in that regard.
Right.
But that's a mechanical thing that can be worked through with trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have a job that I need to do to provide for my family.
Right.
I have a family.
Yeah.
And so I have these and, you know, various kinds of commitments in life. And so those all need to be handled first because those are my jobs.
Yeah.
Do my job that I'm lucky to have in this town.
Right.
Pay my bills. Help my wife works too. Provide for our children. Be a dad. Do all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever time is left over, I can try and maybe pursue some of the things that we're all still trying to pursue. Doesn't leave a lot of time. And I'll tell you what has to be ruled out. And it was an easy choice is stand up. I can't go to clubs at night and keep late hours and come home at 2 a.m. I can't.
No.
Also, I'm asleep by 10 o'clock.
kills the comedy career. Kills the comedy career.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I have some friends in town. You want to come see my show Saturday? I want to start midnight.
Yeah, matinees only.
Nah, I'll be all right.
But there's other ways to try and do it without stand-up.
Yeah.
Also, let's be honest. I really enjoy doing stand-up, and I had a lot of friends that helped me get on stage. And I'll always get to hang my hat. And you did more stand-up than I did, but I'll always get to hang my hat on the fact that I got to perform at the Hollywood Improv.
Right.
A place that I'd seen on TV when I was a kid staying up late in Massachusetts. So I've stood on that stage. I've told jokes. People laughed at the jokes. That's like getting called up from the whatever is below minors and throwing a couple pitches in one game at the major league level, and then you're done.
And then you're done. Yeah, I feel that too sometimes.
And like, I did that.
Yeah.
But I was a much better joke writer than performer.
I mean, you're
which is fine.
I think we share some similarities in how stand up stage. How can you translate your actual self, your writing, and your persona into a nice tight 7-minute set? I struggle with it a lot. You are a fantastic writer, so I see where you're coming from on there. And you're doing writing now, though, right? You're trying to get a little bit.
With
you got the dad stuff going on.
Yeah, our friend Jamie Kaler,
who
is also a successful working comic and actor.
Yeah.
So he's trying to use whatever clout he has to start this website for dads called The Dadlands. And so, you know, he rang me up and asked me to come write jokes for him. And so I've been writing They're just like, they're like joke and picture memes about being a dad, mm-hmm. stuff that all dads hopefully can relate to, and some longer blogs. And so, you know, at this point, I'll take whatever I can get. I'm grateful mm-hmm. he asked me.
Yeah.
It's if 200 people read my blog, that's 199 more people, more than we're going to read it if I did it on my own.
Right.
And, you know, his numbers are ticking up, and, you know, you know, it's his website. He's got the hard part.
Right.
I'm just trying to chip in and be funny and right. relatable to other dads. And I love it. It's great. Anytime I can be creative, I love it. Because mm-hmm. I moved out here, Ken, when I was 14 with my mom.
Yeah. Child actor Beatrice.
Child actor in Boston.
Yeah.
Successful in mm-hmm. Boston. All my siblings were older. The honeymoon was over in my family. My mom and I moved out here so I could yeah. be an actor. I was recruited.
You were recruited.
To come out here. Recruited.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, what's his name in Moneyball?
Yeah. The
Brad Pitt
the,
guy.
The Brad, oh, Billy Bean.
Yeah, Billy Bean.
Billy Bean.
Yeah. Recruited heavily, too yeah, early.
Too early.
So I come out here, and what's great, though, is I peaked when I was 14, because I came out here. My first audition was my first job. My favorite TV show when I was a weird 13, 14-year-old yeah. was Airwolf.
Oh, Airwolf.
Nobody at Swampscott Junior High was talking about Airwolf the next day. Just me. And
Chad Michael Vincent.
So I came out here. By the way, God rest his soul, even though he's still alive.
Still alive, yeah.
God rest him.
He needed to hang out with you a little bit more.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that was the first job I booked.
You booked Airwolf.
There weren't a lot of kids in that show, but there was one episode in like season 3 where he finds like a long lost maybe son and he goes to his school.
Yeah.
And I have like 2 lines. So that's it. I moved out here and I got the dream job on my dream show, and it's been downhill.
And you thought, I've hit the ground running.
Right.
This is going to happen. It's like my first stand-up gig was the Belly Room in front of a sold-out, packed crowd. And it was really successful. My friend said, that's the best stand-up debut I've ever seen. I'm like, I've got this. And it's been...
There you go.
Yeah. Now I'm not doing it anymore. So you book Airwolf. Yeah. And you've been at you post a picture. I've seen it maybe a couple times. Were you on, like, was it Cagney and Lacey?
I got arrested on Cagney and Lacey.
You got arrested on Cagney and Lacey.
Yep. That was great. They were wonderful.
Tyne
Daly and Sharon Gless. Yeah, that was nice.
Street tough.
Yeah. And right. So that was all while I was in high school. And then I went to college and I got distracted. And then coming out of college, I was never able to fully recommit to acting.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as I said, I certainly wasn't there were other things going on that self-sabotaged.
Sure.
So I just never brought it together. And then I started getting into writing and I really wanted to write. And there were little fleeting writing jobs here and there. Nothing union, nothing worth talking about, just odd jobs here and there.
Yeah.
And then stumbling, quite literally stumbling into stand-up, which is great. You get on stage, you're performing.
It's immediate.
Right, exactly.
Immediate feedback, immediate failure.
Yes, exactly. And if I'm going to fail, I want the failure immediately.
Oh, yeah. You don't want 6
wait.
Months of writing
I'm the
failure.
MTV generation. I want it now. And I laugh because there's a way to spin it that I'm doing now exactly what I set out to do.
Mm.
I was a kid. I'd look out my window and I, even at like 10 years old, I have to move to Hollywood. I want to move to Hollywood and work in the movies. And gosh darn it, Ken, I do.
You do.
I just should have been way more specific. I have a very, very, I don't want to say successful, but I have, I continually work mm-hmm. in movies, in Hollywood,
right.
for studios, on big movies, as an assistant accountant.
Hey, people need them paychecks.
And I tell people, look, I'm grateful. Because I generally work for one of my friends who gave me my first administrative job in film.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for him because I'm carving out a little career.
Yeah.
And that job is union.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, Runaway Production and there's just, I mean, you look at, not to get political, we won't, but no matter how you approach it, every job is a high demand job because there's a shortage of quality jobs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's 25 people. That's ridiculous. There's 2,500 people that will do this job if I don't do it.
I'm on
the message boards. Everybody's looking for
everyone
work. I would prefer to do something more creative. And like we talked about, when time allows, I'm pursuing things to that end.
Right.
Had a couple of near misses. You know, I almost got my ticket punched a couple of times, but the at-bats are few and far in between.
You got to get in there and take
I get called up.
Yeah.
Few, like There are people that are out there submitting and taking chances, and oh, there's another job that came and went. I'll get the next one.
Right.
You know, I get to really throw my hat in the ring like once every couple of years.
Mm.
But in the meantime, I work. I do what's asked of me. I handle my business, and that has to be okay.
This journey here to get to that point, I mean, yeah, you're right. Looking out the window at 14, and we all have those big hopes and dreams along the way. And then, you know, it's kind of this where you need to be. You look back, you're like, oh, that's why we got to here. And who knows what's to come. Mm-hmm. And with Kaler building this Dadlands thing, and we're going to definitely talk about that more at the end and where people can find
it. Sure.
It's like, the hope is still there, right?
Yeah.
The hope meaning some magical ticket being punched. But in the meantime, you've got this, you seem very content with what you have.
Yeah.
You struggle maybe a little bit at night going, gosh, I could have been a contender. Yeah. I could have been arrested on Cagney and Lacey one more time. But it takes luck to get to where you are now.
So the contentment is something I have to work at, because I'm not always content. Let's be honest. I'm not always content.
Well, that's fair. It's a fair assessment.
In my weaker moments, I'm Fredo Corleone. It ain't the way I wanted it, Ken.
I got these two
I'm
kids.
I'm talented, not like people say. There are times I wig out, quite frankly,
and get
vertigo. And then there are times I'm completely at peace with how it's unfolding.
Yeah.
And then most of the time, 85% of the time, I'm somewhere in the middle sloshing around.
Right.
But would life be easier if I just said, that's not going to happen, and just handle my business and have a spiritual asterisk for the rest of my life?
Sure. Work for the weekend. Yeah.
Do I keep hope alive?
Keep hope alive, man.
Because you never know.
You never know. No, absolutely, you never know. And I love that's what I'm saying. You love those stories, and I want you to be. I think you could be part of those stories if you find. That's what I'm saying. You got these kids in your hands, and then what are those experiences? What can you mine from that? It's not just that you have new material,
but
you have a new experience, and your journey to get to where you are, as you know, somber as it is at times, hearing a little bit of your struggles and stories. I mean, there's victory on the other side here.
Yeah. If I'm running around, if I'm with my own thoughts and thinking, woe is me,
mm-hmm.
and fixate on this obsession, this white whale of a career in film and television, it's as important as anything else, but ultimately, is it really?
Is it really?
But if I get so obsessed with that I can't see the success I do have, my wife, my wonderful two daughters, if I can't get good with that, then I have a problem.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm not good with it,
but
most of the time I am.
The hour of doubt versus going to bed content with it is what the difference is.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm lucky that I don't have a lot of sleepless nights because I'm exhausted. Nothing keeps me up anymore. It's mostly like in the shower, driving in the car where it all descends, but at night I'm out.
I mean, I was very happy to book you for this show here.
Right?
We were trying, you know, to get you out here. And about those kids, at least their effect on your life, there's some very comedic stuff going on. I love hearing your struggles to try to watch Star Wars.
Yeah.
Here I am.
Yeah.
I'm the Star Wars nerd. I'm living my life free and easy. And you, a Star Wars fan, just the act of getting to the theater, your life has been forever changed.
So I'm a product of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And this 1977, for the young kids who don't know, if you didn't see it in the theater, you weren't seeing it.
Right.
And I'm one of those people that saw it in the theater like 300 times.
Right.
Had to. Drag, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
I've probably seen it, every movie, every pop movie in the 70s and 80s anyway, but the Star Wars movies, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And the prequels, all in.
All in.
Disappointed, but all in. And then, of course, the new ones are coming out, I'm in. But now, with the new movies, I've got these, I had one kid child now too, and I have a blog on the Dadlands website outlining it, which you can go find, but The Force Awakens. Do you want to go through it?
I want to go through it.
The Force Awakens.
Fascinating story.
The Force Awakens comes out. I have one child.
Yeah.
My wife and I, since we had our child, have not been to the movies as of this point in the story.
Right.
So we're off on holiday break or something. We're both home. We don't have any. We don't have any real family, or there's no one else to watch a kid. So we have this genius idea for The Force Awakens. No one says we have to see it together.
Ooh.
So we go tag team. We buy back-to-back tickets, single ticket showing. She goes, she comes home. She's like, I'm not saying a word. Leave the house right now.
Yeah.
And then I go and I come back, and it's great. We tag teamed. Not ideal, no, but we saw
Force Awakens. Right. love that creative parody.
Yeah. So what comes out next?
Rogue One.
So,
because you got this plan in place, you're like, it worked so well for Force Awakens,
right? But Rogue One, we're like, can we get crazy? Because now we've had our, you know, we're like a year and change into it. We're seasoned veteran parents now, and so we're like, can we go together? So we do, and we leave the nanny home. And I think we still have one child when this happens,
right?
And I think Melina's pregnant with our second.
Gotcha.
So nanny's home. With the big, with the Mimi's probably like two or either side of two.
Right.
And we go see Rogue One. We're in the theater together. And unbeknownst to either of us, like I know my phone's blowing up.
Right.
She knows her phone's blowing up.
Right.
Neither of us know each other's phone is blowing up. Because that's red alert. I'm just like, somebody's texting. About 20 minutes in, I go to the restroom because I'm an old man. I can't sit through a movie.
Yeah. You got to pick your spots.
Right. And so it's for the 3 hours they're stuck on Jedha, which is crazy because it's like a 2 hour movie. So I go out to the lobby and I check my phone and I'm blowing up.
Yeah.
I check voicemails. ADT is called. The nanny's called. And then Melina, her phone, same thing. So you pick up the messages, and it's like this whole sequence of events. Hey, this is ADT. Your alarm's going off. Panic. Got to listen to all the messages.
Yeah.
The nanny calls. There's noise. I don't know what to do. And then she calls back. They've already come and gone. It's all fine. So now I call ADT. Melina's on the phone. And we find out, while we've been in the theater, my daughter, who's never before expressed an interest in the security panel in our house.
Never
looked sideways at it, right? Or else we would have baby-proofed it.
Yeah.
She walks up and she hits fire. So the fire department, like they call us to see if it's a false alarm. We're not answering.
Yeah.
They roll the fire department. They come. They talk to my nanny. And then they leave. And by now it's all said and done. So we're like, so there's really nothing for us to do. So we go back into the movie. We've missed chunks.
And
we just try to enjoy the rest of it. Stuff blows up.
We'll read the plot on Wikipedia. Yeah. We'll fill it in.
So, yeah. So there's a big gap in, and then, you know, we're just like kind of like, you got to understand being a parent. You're constantly under siege. It's wonderful, but like, it's like you're always in the state of, so this is just another thing.
Head on a swivel.
So we had to go home, and we brought donuts for the fire department near our house. And we're like, we're so sorry.
Yeah.
And then there's a great screen grabs from the security system. There's her inspecting the system. There's a grab of her pressing the button, and there's one of her running away. And then the next photo is five firemen towering over the nanny in our living room. Okay, so now we have two children. There's a chance this story, by the way, is turning out to be longer than Rogue One.
No, that's fair.
So we
just as long as that was a great third act.
Now, Last Jedi.
Yeah.
We have two children,
now.
Both upright and functional, running around.
You're veterans now.
Yeah. We're like, okay, we're not going to see it together. That's just not happening.
Right.
We're going to tag team again. So, because that works.
It worked well in 2015.
Absolutely.
Right. No fire alarm.
So
alarms
my wife sport. Goes and she comes home. I go.
Mm-hmm.
I go. And I'm in the theater.
And it's so nice you send your wife first. What a gentleman.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You can't trust me not to spoil it. she comes home and it's great. And I go and I'm sitting there. And, you know, we're in the, what's the place everybody hates in Last Jedi? Canto Bites.
Yeah.
There's something wrong in the theater.
Right.
And there's a smattering of people because everybody's seen it by now. Also, we're like 2 weeks.
2 weeks into the run. Okay.
And so people are kind of looking around and you can tell what's wrong, Ken.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You just know.
Yeah.
But you're like, am I really? Nah. Finally, the film stops.
Yeah.
The teenage high schooler ushers come in. Lights come up. Everybody, we're going to be evacuating the theater. And I'm like, oh, here we go again.
Here we go.
There's been, how did they phrase it? There has been a what did they it's in the article. They said something great, like we have like an odor irregularity, which is a very nice way of saying somebody took a crap in the theater. And look, I'm a dad. I'm like, is that what I smell? And you're thinking maybe it's somebody with a kid. They brought a toddler in or somebody in an accident. No. Somebody just dropped trow in the theater and took a deuce. And I got to tell you, in 46 years of seeing movies, a lot of stuff's happened. A lot of stuff happening to other people in movie theaters.
A lot of Alanis Morissette songs, like, telling you.
How are we not trending on Twitter? I don't understand. So they gave us refunds and routed us into different theaters, and it took me like 5 hours to see Last Jedi. On the bright side, I got bumped up to a better theater with better sound.
Oh, better set.
But I came home. My wife's like I told her what was going on. She's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm so shell shocked."
Or you're just so used to that dealing with this kind of stuff.
Well, people were irate and giving like the teenage Usher's earfuls. Like he was the one that did from them. What do you want? They're not thrilled about it.
Yeah, exactly. Which one of the staff is thrilled they have to go clean up the human mess?
Yeah, people parent in different ways, but I'm at that point. I mean, I try to be a pretty placid guy anyway.
Yeah.
But I just like, all right. Which brings me back to my overriding default emotional state.
The state of a father. And I'm guessing Solo you haven't even tried yet.
No, we.
Yeah.
We thought about going to see it just for the story.
Yeah.
But the story's awesome as it is. So
ends with human poop.
We've been busy lately with any number of things. So my joke, I have a couple of jokes about these about new movies that come out. Like, oh man, did you see Solo? Did you see Infinity Wars? Not unless it was on Nick Jr. If it was straight to Nick Jr., I probably saw it.
Nick Jr. should do that version.
Yeah,
they'd make a lot of money.
That's right. And we watch things at home.
Yeah,
but you don't there's two things you need to watch a movie at home, like an adult movie.
Sure,
you need a 2-hour kid-free window. Mm-hmm. Which generally is at night after they've gone to bed, or during the day when they nap if you're both at home.
Right.
You need that 2-hour window. You also need the wherewithal to stay awake during those 2 hours. And there's the rub.
There's the rub.
Like we love the Marvel movies because we dated over the first early Iron Mans. I was my wife's poor man's Robert Downey Jr. Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Just without the enormous financial industrial success.
Yeah.
All the demons and alcoholism. Oh, yeah, that's me. I'm in. So we finally rented Ragnarok online.
Right.
Five nights.
Took you 5 nights to get there.
And it's a good movie. It's not like it's a bad movie. I love it. We love that movie. Five nights.
You gotta make it a 5-part.
Yeah, where did you fall asleep? Where did I fall asleep? What's
and you have to backtrack. It's turn Ragnarok into a web series.
it was a 5-night miniseries. It was fantastic.
They always say, right, kids are supposed to change your life. I have a friend who's actually a state senator now, and he used to tell me, he was an LAPD officer, used to work with me, and he was like, man, if it doesn't change your life, you are absolutely doing it wrong.
He used
to drill that into my head.
Yes.
And I guess you just have to embrace that, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get touchy-feely mushy about
let's do it.
I mentioned this earlier. Like, there were photos. I know there was a life before Melina. I can't conceive of her ever not being in my life. And that was true just of her.
Just of her, right.
Now, like, there's no... Here it is.
Yeah.
Time travel. Do you ever have the time travel fantasy? If I could just go back in time, knowing what I know now, and live my life over, the moves I would have made, the savvy moves, the career,
the confidence I would have instilled.
All of it, right?
Yeah.
It's an empty fantasy because it's, you know... But it's easy to delve into that fantasy a little too much, and I'm there.
Yeah.
And of course I would do that in a heartbeat. I'm telling you, if Doc Brown himself showed up today.
Great Scott, Michael.
Yes. We got to do something about your kids. If I had the opportunity, in all honesty, to go back and live my life over and change it, there's a ripple effect, a butterfly effect.
Yeah.
You change one thing, everything changes.
Yeah.
Kids, and even if you could make the case that somehow I'd still find my way to Molina and I'll be fine.
Sure.
Kids are a lightning strike, nanosecond lightning strike of chemistry.
Yeah.
Biological chemistry.
Yeah.
there's no way if I change one little thing in the past, there's no way these two girls happen.
Right.
I'm not taking that chance.
No.
Which means I got to stop looking in the rearview mirror and deal with it going forward, because it's not even like people talk about loving their kids. And I was curious about that when my kids were first born.
Right.
And I was about to have kids. Like, am I going to feel that love? And I don't know if I'm feeling it right away. And then I wake up one morning. It's not that analog love the way you love some things.
Mm-hmm.
It's this living, breathing part of me. I don't even know that there's a word for, I mean, I guess the word is love, but it's
it's the only word we have.
Yeah. Well, we need more words.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something else entirely. And they are just so, I don't know if everybody parents this way. I don't know if they do. I don't know if everybody, I think a lot of people do.
Right.
But I don't know that everybody feels this way. It's this word that's, I'm quite literally speechless.
Yeah.
There is no not them. I'm so intertwined with them. And it's and don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's, frustrating.
Yeah.
And you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're upset. And sometimes they're having bad days. But on the whole, my God.
Yeah.
And I need to enjoy it while I can, because the day is coming where they're going to become self-aware, like Skynet, and turn on me.
Your children are like Skynet. Well, you said three going on preteen.
Yeah, three is my 3-year-old has taught me that my favorite child age is two. Because two, they're two interactive and upright, and they walk around and they can talk a little bit.
Right.
And then three.
They have their own ideas on what's going on there.
Yeah.
That's fascinating stuff to hear. I don't understand it. I think it's one of those things you don't get until you're there.
Yeah.
But the little lightning strike of chemistry, as you call it, is a great way to say it. One of my friends, same type of thing. He was, struggling. He had a different story, but in terms of marital problems and all that kind of things. And there was a couple of times they thought maybe they wouldn't be together, right? And they were almost made that choice. And then they got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And he has all these deep philosophical questions in the universe, all these things of who's what and how we got here. All these, because this is my proof right here, this little creature in front of me.
Yeah.
Does not happen if I turn left that night. Or don't sit down to have one more conversation with my wife to try to work this out. So, their story is different than what you're saying. But, just this, like, the butterfly effect is real. Mm-hmm. And I think being content with where you end up, despite all failings, failures to launch, anything that might have happened before.
Yeah.
Like Yoda says in those movies you try to see,
I might have been in the lobby calling E.T. Yeah. I don't know. What did he say?
about your mind on where you are and what you're doing.
Right.
Right. Warning Luke. Even now, Luke looks off into the distance. And I think we all can be plagued by that. So to hear you have some valuable lessons of what you're saying about career and life and failures. I think it's all important.
And metaphorically, I would say about living life generally, but also about parenting. Mm-hmm. Somebody burned the ancient Jedi texts. Or just kind of winging it. Yeah.
Just kind of weird.
There's oral tradition.
I could not and will not understand until the day happens or not. I don't know if I'll have children, but you never know what happens. Can you try to explain the first night you're home with the first little kid and it's real? You're on duty. You've graduated the academy. You're in your car with your badge and you're patrolling the city for the first time.
Yes.
You got this kid in your hands. Is it total fear?
Yeah. Well, first, I want to tell people that this is just how my life's unfolding.
Yeah.
I mean, billions of people have kids and families.
Yes.
But it's not, this is how my life's unfolded. But it's certainly not, it's just my experience.
Yeah.
People can experience that kind of love and satisfaction and joy and many, 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 many ways. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have kids. I want to make sure that's clear. And some people shouldn't have. We know some of those people.
Yes.
The first moment, it's interesting. I will tell you the first pregnancy, the first labor delivery.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great time with my wife being pregnant. Mm-hmm. We had a better time with the second one.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time, everything was first.
Yeah.
It turns out they weren't. I don't think now there were complications, but there were unexpected things that happened in labor and delivery, and it was very stressful. And so there's just like an emotion. You're broken down emotionally. And, and then there's the she stays in the hospital for a couple of days. And by the way, Kaiser gives you a free steak dinner.
Oh, look at that.
It's great.
That's how I'm going to get my steak
dinner. I still have a photo of my very first steak dinner in the hospital. So I'm holding my 24-hour-old baby.
Right.
And the nurse comes in and gives her to me. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then she looks at me like this, the look she's probably given thousands of men, like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But then something happened. I dropped something on the floor and I don't know what it was.
Right.
And like a pro, man, I palmed my one arm, my daughter, scoot down and pick something up off the floor. Yeah. And the nurse was like, oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Multitasking. And I'm like, oh, maybe I can do this.
I got this.
We drove home from the hospital at about 3 miles an hour.
Yeah.
My apologies if you were behind us on the 101 that day. We got home and day four, we had like a wellness visit at the hospital.
Oh, you gotta go back.
Not even like four complete days. Like, it was like the morning of day four.
Good.
So we had to put her in the carrier, the cart to take her out, the little handy basket. And then we went to the doctor's appointment, and it was great. Even if there's no medical reason to do it, and there is, a wellness checkup, you know, jaundice, are you latching and feeding, you know, all that. Is baby healthy? Even if they were just making the whole thing up, it gets you out of the house. Because if they hadn't done that, I think we'd still be hunkered down.
Still there.
Afraid to leave.
Afraid to leave with the kid.
So on the way home,
wrapping
we're like,
it in bubble wrap.
Oh, we're out. Should we stop at Target? So my daughter went to Target with us. Handheld, like those carts, those like handheld carts you pick up at the front of Target, and so we're walking around a Target with our 3.5 day old daughter, and I'm like, hey, we're doing it,
we're gonna live.
As far as those were moments, but you touch on something else when you ask for a moment, and again, this is only my experience.
Yeah,
I was ready for moments. I was ready for singular, definable Kodak moments that I could put in a scrapbook. We've had some, but I got to tell you, my experience is that it has been this one, especially when they're newborns, it has been one fluid moment. There's no time for me to pause and go, oh, hey, that just happened.
Because,
what was my daughter's first word? I really don't know.
You don't remember?
I remember she was making noises and starting to talk. And then I woke up one day and there were three words.
Right.
When did she take her first steps? I don't know how you score that. Yeah. She was trying to stand and falling, and I didn't know. I didn't know until I had a baby. They do this thing called cruising, where they hang on the furniture and kind of scoot around. And maybe there's a stumbling step in there. I don't know how you score the first step.
Right.
I just know I woke up one day and she was walking across the room to me.
Setting off fire alarms.
Have you heard of swaddling?
Yeah.
You wrap the kids in a blanket and there's a whole tucking, like it's like
good
a bandana thing. Yeah, there's a whole skill to it.
Yeah.
And I was ready to ace this. I'm practicing in the hospital on dolls and I'm swaddling
class.
The F out of the swaddle.
Yeah.
And I was all prepared for swaddling. Swaddling came and went.
Yeah.
Faster than I could document it. I'm like, what happened to swaddling? Because now there's no time to prepare.
Now she's trying to borrow my car.
That was going
to
be my thing. So
I was going to be the swaddling dad.
I try not to meddle with other about to be dads I meet, except to tell them, to pump them up and tell them, look, whatever, you're going to be great.
Yeah.
It's hard. You have to be a certain kind of person and not be great.
Right.
You're going to be great.
You're
going to have your own experience. Don't let people rob you of that. Enjoy the moment you can. But also, don't go nuts obsessing over about what you're going to do, because it, honest to God, Ken, is the most in the moment thing I've ever experienced in my life.
Mm.
We talked earlier about day by day.
Yeah.
You need the plan. You need to concern yourself, you know, with things that are out in front. But it is the most in the moment, handle what's happening right now thing I've ever done in my life. And by the time number two came around, man, we had better or worse, just different. The day our second daughter was born was so much fun.
Really?
It was so much fun.
Like we got this time. We know what happens.
We had, and some stuff went wrong.
Sure.
One of our dogs threw a hissy fit that day and actually had a medical emergency. So we were both
well-timed.
Yeah, we were both leaving for the hospital. We had to divvy up in the separate cars.
Wow.
This is like the Star Wars thing.
This is.
I had to take our dog to the vet while she was checking it at the hospital, leave the dog. And I'm telling them, like, my wife's in labor, and they're like, what? What? And so it's a little more than VCA needed to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then I jam over to the hospital, and we were all in on Archer at the time.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And Archer and Lana, I think, had just had their baby on the show. So we're doing Archer quotes and playing Danger Zone, and we actually got retweeted by the Archer official account.
Oh, really?
Which one of my highlights.
Yeah.
So like the first time was the first time, an emotional and draining and overload, and what's going to happen, and we don't know what's what.
Sure.
Time two. Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. And which one of the births did you put the A Girl Has No Name?
Birth. That was number two. When we were
that was number
fun.
Two. You're having fun.
Because it was also, it was Game
you
of
went
Thrones
viral,
season
kid.
Five
on? Around that time.
That's right. So we're in our labor and delivery room. They have a dry erase board, like most medical rooms do. Mother's name, Melina. Father's name, Mike. Child, sex, girl. A child's name, A Girl Has No Name. Wrote it in dry erase, posted it on Facebook for my, 30 likes for my friends.
Right.
Somebody, I don't even know who, placed it on Imgur or Reddit. And I think the last time I checked, it was like 600,000 likes. Because Game of Thrones was in the consciousness then. Everybody was doing like all the quotes from Game of Thrones, especially A Girl Has No Name.
Yep. Yep, there you go.
And of course, I'm not really present on social media, but I enjoy the people who thought it was fake.
Right,
like really that?
Nah, yeah,
That's when you would fake.
So you're having fun the second
time
around. We had
so much fun.
That's amazing.
And they give you a wristband. In a secure labor and delivery, you need to have a wristband to get in.
It's the club you get to go in.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm in and out because I'm running errands and handling our other daughter who's at home with the nanny. And we bring her in. And it's a whole thing. They meet and it's beautiful and wonderful. Sure. And so, but I got to tell you, for the 3 days I was walking around with a wristband, my medical, I just had a kid wristband out in the world. There was a skip in my step.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for other guys with wristbands.
Do like a wrist bump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to be happy about. Mm. I don't think I've ever been as giddy as I was baby number two.
Yeah.
With the wristband walking around in the world. Like I got a hall pass.
Like a red badge of courage.
Yeah.
Baby badge of courage. That's wonderful. Right. That's wonderful. No third one. No, you closed up the team there.
Yeah, we
cutting all the players.
We would love a third one. We really would.
Yeah,
it will happen if and when we win the lottery.
Yeah.
There's no other way.
No tryouts for a catcher or a left fielder.
No,
you got the team set for right now.
And also, like you at this point, you're like, all right, we have two girls.
Yeah.
We would love a boy just to round it out.
Sure.
Just to have that experience, but then you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know people that went that route and have four girls.
Right.
Which is great.
Great, yeah.
So to have a boy for us is not the right reason to do it again. We'd have to really want a third child, period.
Right.
And again, we would be open to that if we had a lot more money and a lot more time.
And a lot more, less Star Wars movies to watch.
Because right now we can play man on man.
Yeah.
You have three kids, you got to go zone.
Zone, and that's tough, man.
Yeah.
You can't zone. You can't necessarily win championships with zone defense. As we start to close up here with this wonderful, raw, intimate conversation,
I've enjoyed this.
It's been you've spinned some wonderful value, wisdom jewels and yarns here.
And we've talked about my favorite subject.
Yeah,
me.
You. Hey, that's what we do in this town, man.
Can I get a copy of this?
Absolutely. Nice. For your reel.
Play it in the car.
Or just for yourself over and over there. I do want to talk about Dadlands as we close. It's something you're working on, and love to see more people get some eyes and ears on this here. And Jamie Kaler, great comic.
Yes.
Actor, you might have seen him on the show My Boys back in the day on TBS. Gosh, again, another person I've known around the town for about 15 years now.
Good actor, good comic, also a very good friend,
yeah.
And also the father to two girls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you say that already?
Not in that detail.
Yeah, okay.
So he starts Dadlands. Where can people find it? How often are things up, and what are you doing for it regularly?
Well, like the rest of us, Jamie's always trying to find the next thing, you know, despite his obvious successes. Mm-hmm. As you kind of glean from me and him, so much of our life is filtered through children.
Right.
And there's any number of websites out there that deal with parenting seriously, economically, consumer stuff. You know, there's a lot of mom sites. There's some dad sites.
Sure.
But I think Jamie saw a vacancy in the kind of dad site he wanted to do, which is commiserating.
Yeah. Loving commiseration.
Loving, venting, commiserating, and playing up the humor.
Yeah.
And realizing that, what we're going through as dads, we're not alone. So he's put some time and resources into it. Mm. He'd been doing some work for some other websites, some other parenting websites. And so so he brought in some of those people to help him build this website, somebody to do the site, somebody to do the content, and some other people, the technical stuff. And so, you know, it's looking good. You know, he's also doing videos, parenting videos, with various comics that we've known.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's a presence on the web, on Facebook, there's a page on Facebook, plus a closed group for just the dads.
Okay. Closed membership. I couldn't get in.
It is, yeah.
My PS4 doesn't count as a kid. Okay. Fair enough.
And Instagram and Twitter, and you know, it's quick one-liner jokes about being a dad that, you know, you hope people relate to. It's deep dives and blogs, some funny, like I posted the Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
I posted a takedown of Caillou, which everybody agrees with. Do you know Caillou?
No.
Oh, you're very lucky.
Who's Caillou?
Oh, you don't know?
I don't know who Caillou
is. He's like the Canadian Charlie Brown.
Oh, wow.
Except nothing like Charlie Brown. It's like, we all watch kids' cartoons now.
Yeah.
And there are some we enjoy more than others. Like, oh, PJ Masks.
Sure.
I'm in. They fight crime.
Right, right.
And then there are some you enjoy less, you know. But there is, I've never seen anything like it. I thought I was alone.
Yeah.
It's a Canadian cartoon of a boy living with his mom and dad. And he is supposed to learn lessons. But the general consensus is that he's just a spoiled brat that's never going to learn anything because he never learns.
Right.
And he whines and he's entitled and his parents are kind of vague. And I go into this in my
bit. Yeah.
So, but you come to find out every single parent on the planet hates this show. Hates it. There's nobody even neutral.
No, like, it's all right. Ready to attack it.
So now
I must check this out.
But and then there's just a lot of jokes, a lot of pictures, a lot of GIFs. So like, you know, hey, this is what parenting looks like. This is what it's like being a dad when you come home from work. And it's just, and hopefully it's all relatable and funny to you know, people that don't have children. Because you know, I mean, we've all seen enough parenting on television. We've all had parents.
All had parents. All caused them
to
problems.
Varying degrees of success.
Right.
So it's just supposed to be fun and you know, it's it's like, you know, I love the movie Mr. Mom, but not everybody does because there are some dated parts.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, it doesn't quite fit the 2018 mold.
Right.
But this is Mr. Momming 2018, except it's Mr. Dad.
Mr. Dad.
Yeah, because, you know.
It's the own thing. That's great.
Yeah, it's a whole new world. But it's a fun site.
Dadlands.com or The Dadlands?
I want to say it's like, Dadlands. I don't know.
I mean, I can try to type it up here in the old machine box here.
Yeah. The Dadlands. I just don't know if it's .com or not.
Sure, sure. But it's there, and we got the Dadlands .io.
.io. There you go.
Dadlands.io. Wow, the internet's
does
got.
Does
that
mean
one.
It's hosted by like an offshore banking conglomerate?
It's hosted by an improv group there.
Right.
Ah, there it is. The one episode of Caillou. What's it, Caillou?
Caillou. Yeah, it's
you
my
should actually
it's,
watch.
Yeah, I actually found one episode. Like, we all hate him, but there's one episode that I actually think, in spite of itself, is worth watching.
That is good. Also, some funny stuff, some powerful stuff.
There's some good writers on there. Some other guys writing some really interesting articles about parenting, and some other funny people. And I'll just do first names, but Jamie, of course, is great. And then there's Megan and Dennis and Jeff and some other guys in there. And it's really cool.
I love it. The Deadlands.io. .io, kids. Yeah. The internet's that long now. We're starting to get out of the .coms. Deadlands.io and Mike Beatrice, this has been a great interview. This has been an intimate fireside chat with some real tough conversations, but also some fun stuff. And so happy to see where you are and to know where your journey has taken you and how you're dealing with it and having fun and celebrating it right now.
I hope I've helped the kids somewhere listening from a bedroom in rural America who have dreams. I hope I've inspired them to sit tight and do some community theater and give it some time.
Don't worry about being booked on Airwolf quite yet.
That's right. Ken, I love you enormously. I'm so glad we are friends.
Yeah.
And I look forward to doing this again.
Absolutely. We should do it soon. Maybe as your kids get into high school and you have a little more free time.
Anything to get me out of the house.
That's it. You can follow Mike Beatrice on Twitter, though, right? At
Michael Beatrice.
There you go.
And Instagram at underscore Michael Beatrice.
Ooh, you had to. Someone got there first.
And when I find him, he's a dead man.
Absolutely, I'll help you with that. So follow Michael on those sites. He is one of the funniest, wittiest, smartest writers I've ever had the pleasure of working with, or see perform, or read his work. So you guys, if you don't follow him already, some of you might be old Knapsack Files listeners, and you already do. The rest of you should join on up. You know the drill here for the Knapsack Files. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack, and that includes Instagram TV. That new tech is here. Is it the new Vine, the new Vero, or a competition to YouTube? We'll find out, but I'm on there. You can follow me there, putting up shows and things as well as on Twitch, you guys know as well, and Patreon page if you want. Hitting some new goals are there, patreon.com/thenapsackfiles. Thanks for the patience through some of the recent technical issues with the hosting server. We are back up and normal, at least at the time of this recording. So that is it. We'll see you next time. For Mike, for the fire department responding to all the baby-induced alarms, we'll see you next time here on the Knapsack Files.